Welcome back to the podcast. It's been a little while since we decided to sit down and do a podcast, but Jamie and I have been discussing what it takes to make a good podcast, and we realized it was just doing the same thing as we did before. But we're also thinking about launching it on like a channel called The Graphic, which was kind of inspired by El Gráfico
of Argentina.
Of Argentina, which is incredibly pretentious. But at the same time is also like speaks to some of what we were talking about when we first started doing the podcast together. So for that very reason, we're going to make our own podcast channel and try to make it into something. But for now, it still lives on the Lawrence McKenna on Football channel. Welcome back. It's good to have you guys. Interesting weekend. I always feel like when you get back from the international break, and I know probably every podcast this week has started this way, they go, you know, international football's out the way. We can just concentrate now on the Premier League. Nothing is going to distract me ever again from this. All these kind of things. And actually, it was just that there were just really good games this weekend, like a series of them.
And after a particularly drab period of international football.
Do you know what? The period between the two international breaks was actually like a really quite flat football period, I felt. Like no game in my mind kind of stands out in that time. I know there will be games where people will be saying in the comments like, oh, you can't forget this. But like,
you had the two at the end of last week. You had the City-Chelsea classic.
Yeah. But it wasn't, it doesn't stand out as like, oh, classic. Because I don't think Chelsea kicked on from it.
Well, I had the thing on Saturday of
sitting
and watching Liverpool
yeah.
versus City and being like, oh, this feels so good.
Right.
Because I watched, you know, it was the classic, like England away in the Balkans, North Macedonia.
North Macedonia is a hard place to go. I mean, Italy found that out. I feel like people underestimate them.
They haven't lost there for a while.
Because North Macedonia is kind of like, it's a, like, I feel like every country in that region has like a real point to prove. It's sort of like, you know nothing about us anyway. You care so little about our history. Have that, you big bloody FA Cups.
Yeah, there's also something about like, the players were knackered. It was interesting because I heard Southgate say, look, the players are knackered.
From what exactly was he saying?
Well, from the season.
Yeah, because it can't be travel.
But the interesting thing for me was like, I understand that, but there's probably like five places or six places in that starting 11 up for grabs.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that you would kind of go autopilot through a game. If I was any of those players, essentially a start apart from Harry Kane, I'd be thinking, Jesus, this is my, Declan Rice maybe aside, like this is my window to grab this game. So it was weird that it was so pedestrian.
Is it like the point in the marathon you get to where you're about 10K in, so not even, like maybe just over a quarter of the way.
Well, the novelty's gone.
The novelty is definitely gone. And at that point, you're also like, oh, there is so long to go. I am tired. And weirdly, like you trick yourself into being tired, even though you know, as a professional footballer or as someone who's running, you've got that whole marathon in your bag. Like, you know it's going to happen.
Yes, if you don't have Mark Gay breathing down your neck for a place.
Right.
Okay. And that's my confusion always.
Right.
But then when it came back to City versus Liverpool on the weekend, the crispness and the like, oh, they train together. So the game is so organized.
Look at them.
Look at them go. It felt so fresh.
I still feel like there's a lot of interesting England chat there, but I feel like that's maybe for another time. What I would point out is I think the point about tiredness is definitely one. And I felt like that was so interesting for the Liverpool game versus Man City, because it felt so clear to me that the City goal was from tiredness from Alisson. Like Alisson almost looked not like, you know, he didn't look sleepy, although he does have those like eyes that I think we both possess where it's like, oh, have you had enough sleep, mate? He could have had 10 hours and his eyes still look tired.
It's I've got two kids' eyes.
Sure. But even then, I'm like, you know that his wife is looking after them the night before, or they've got like three nannies. And not that he's not a good father. He looks like an incredible father. But as a professional footballer, you go, I have a game.
Headline, Alisson Becker is not a good father.
Do you know what the funny thing was? And it's a really weird insight. When we filmed the Jordan Henderson documentary, don't think I've ever referenced that. We met him while signing footballs and FaceTiming his kids at the same time and sort of just going like, oh, how is your, you know, daddy misses you and things like that. But in Brazilian Portuguese. And I just remember looking at him and being like, oh, those kids adore you. Like absolutely adore you.
Are they in Brazil?
I don't think they were. I think they were in somewhere else, but I think he was just like, they're in England, he was just like, just, you could just tell he was just this great dad. Like he's also just got such a cuddly way to him. He's got such a, like, you just want to be relational to him in some sense.
The same qualities that make him reassuring behind a back four.
Absolutely.
Are the same qualities that would make him a reassuring
forward. And the same reason why when people said over the weekend, if that was Ramsdale making that mistake, we'd all be going spare. I was sort of like, yeah, but it's not Ramsdale making that mistake. It's Alisson, who's arguably one of the top three goalkeepers in the world and has got like a reassuring nature to him. Does that make sense?
The Ramsdale comment is perceptive, but it doesn't take into account the fact that Ramsdale, the thing that's maybe unclear about him is whether he really has that reliability. Mm-hmm. That Alisson like dines off. So Alisson is allowed to make that mistake mm-hmm. without it really affecting his image because we know he's reliable. We know he's a safe pair of hands.
You know, he's also brave to an extent because he's been in a Klopp side, which has really been through the ringer. And there are other goalkeepers that probably go, listen, mate, like you're absolutely just rinsing me. You're exposing me to so much. His need as a top end goalkeeper has been so different down the years, playing for Liverpool, obviously playing for Roma before that. Obviously he had a career leading up to that as well. But you know, when you get to the big league of Roma, Liverpool, and Brazil, he wasn't Brazil goalkeeper when he arrived at Liverpool. I think he was like transitioning into that era of being that great. Like he wasn't like nailed on. It was like him or Edison. Now I feel like he's that. If that makes maybe not for Brazil, but in my mind, he's
well. The thing is, Liverpool couldn't play the way they do really without a goalkeeper who you would back 2/3 of the time 1-1.
I think he might be the most overall best goalkeeper in the world. It was Oblak at one time, I think, and maybe don't talk about that. But like, it was Oblak at one time. And I think he was like the gold standard. Neuer, not necessarily the best goalkeeper in the world, just very uniquely that goalkeeper. I don't think you can really make it's like apples and oranges type comparison with Neuer for me and Alisson. I feel like he's basically the all-rounder that you can kind of make an argument for of, well, your guy does this. Yeah, he does that. Okay, your guy, yeah, he does that. And him replacing Mignolet for me is so, like, it's such a jump. No disrespect to Sam Mignolet. But what the thing with Mignolet was, Sunderland, he was facing such high volume of shots. So it was like, oh, this guy's a good goalkeeper. It became very clear that when he got to Liverpool, it was like, oh, you're going to be, he was in Brendan Rodgers' side, so he wasn't bored. But like, you're a different kind of goalkeeper now and the task is different. Can you adapt? Alisson seems to have simultaneously adapted every season to what Klopp needs him to do. Sometimes we're just going to lock it down and, you know, you're going to face 1-2 big chances a game. Other times, volume. I don't know another goalkeeper that I feel has had that same rigmarole to go through.
Yeah, especially not one who plays for a top club. I mean, the point about volume versus big chances is important. Because all goalkeepers are good shot stoppers. Mm-hmm. So by definition, almost every goalkeeper looks good mm-hmm. in a team that finishes 17th.
Yeah.
Just because you're in a position to look good. Whereas Ramsdale in the second half against Brentford plucked a cross out the air
right.
that he wasn't favourite for.
Yeah.
And I just thought, oh my God, at a top club, that's the intervention.
And I felt that way. I feel that way about quite a few goalkeepers in the Premier League at the moment where I'm like, oh, like that's real command. Like there's quite, and I think, you know, obviously when you're talking about anyone who's playing the top level, they're good, but there is another level of good. And I feel like that's quite high at the moment in the Premier League for me.
Well, we were just chatting off air about the fact that if Ramsdale left Arsenal, there's not an obvious like top Premier League destination for him to go to.
Well, there only feels like there's one to us.
Which is maybe Chelsea.
And I feel like that's actually quite obvious. I don't feel it. Could you make an argument for Spurs? I mean, with Vicario, maybe not, because he seems to just fit so well. It's not really an immediate need. Why would you spend that money when there's clearly needs elsewhere? Chelsea seem to have, well, quite a maligned goalkeeper there. When was the last time they had a goalkeeper they liked?
Courtois, and they liked him exactly until he said, hey, I'd prefer to be in Madrid.
Yeah, and now it's sort of like, oh, screw you, old man.
But it's interesting, because like it just shows like Martinez is brilliant
yeah.
at Villa.
He really is, although Martinez, assorted. By the way, I don't know how old Martinez is. I probably need to look it up. Bro, if I had that hair, and I can say this having this hair, if I had that hair, would that work? No, obviously not. But like, you get my point. How many people, let me just find it. Emi Martin.
He's probably what, like 31?
He's 31.
Yeah.
Is that a 31-year-old man's hair? Although my real question is, what's human age in footballer years? Like, so in footballer years, in human years, he's 23, 24.
Yeah, it's also, does a goalkeeper, The goalkeeper's kind of the grandpa of the side.
Either the grandpa or the like zany uncle that, you know, you're always safe with.
Oh, or like not so safe with.
Yeah, but that's okay.
Because, you know, we've had the Joe Hart, Jordan Pickford avatar,
yeah,
which is like England's number one, like will lamp you if you don't give the ball back to him quickly.
Basically your older brother type. Yeah, the older brother that you know is a bit like, don't cross him.
And they're not reassuring, but they'll make a save that makes you go, "Oh, that's my number one."
Yeah, and every now and again they go, "Come on, give me the ball."
Yeah, and the interesting thing about
that, I saw that live when Joe Hart was like, "Give me that ball." That was so good.
It's so not what you want from a goalkeeper, by the way.
No, especially not at home. That's what I thought was weird. When he like, it was at Wembley.
I think it was against Italy.
At Wembley.
In the Euros.
Then he's had more than one clip where he's done
really?
That. I mean, because I feel like he ran behind the goal. There's a couple of times where he's been famous, I think, for saying things now then. Because I remember seeing him go spare at someone and I was like, you're at home in Wembley, mate. Like, chill.
Is there an argument that like that goalkeeping style makes sense when you're at Birmingham City mm-hmm. in the Championship on loan? And as you go through the ranks, it's like in the European Cup, the goalkeeper's job is to be a chilled out entertainer.
Well, it's basically you have to be Buffon.
Oh.
Buffon is like Champions League. You know, like if the Champions League had a poster, Buffon is that poster.
Shit, without having won it.
Yeah.
Which is like the Greek tragedy. I know, but he is
but in
Mr.
my
Champions
mind,
League.
He won it with every Italian team that won it in those years. So like if he'd have played, basically what you do is you go, if he plays, do Liverpool win in Istanbul? No. If he plays, do they win in Athens? Still the same. He lost with Juve in the penalty shootout, I think, in 0-1-0.
At Old Trafford,
was it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that was like one of the first Champions League games where I remember being like, this is international.
Whoa, these are other countries.
Yeah. And like, I knew about the other countries before, but I was entering like a teen era where I was like, okay, other countries exist and I can visit them independently of these two other people in my life. Well, these other one person.
When I say England number one, who comes, like, who is your Lawrence McKenna's England
David
number
Seaman,
one?
David Seaman. Yeah, and weirdly...
You're old.
Thanks. I remember the Terry Venables era, so that'll tell you everything you need to know. R.I.P. Terry Venables.
R.I.P. Terry Venables.
I mean, a lot of stories about Terry Venables. I think he seems broadly to be one of the nicest men in football. That he had lovely vibes. And I think everyone who seemed to play for him seemed to love him. And I felt... I've always felt this about the FA. I felt like the FA never wanted a man who was bigger, who was like bigger than the FA, if that makes sense. And I think like Terry Venables maybe became a bit too popular for them almost. And Euro 96 was so cruel.
And Glenn Hoddle maybe fits the same mold. Not appointing Harry Redknapp fits the same mold. Like they don't want the character.
Yeah. But at the same time, that felt so needed, I guess. Glenn Hoddle was like a good... I felt like he was a... Yeah. Glenn Hoddle maybe gets a tough rap because of his like magazine interview where he said all the stuff. But outside of that, and the David Beckham stuff, I felt like he got a really tough rap in the David Beckham doc.
Yeah, the David Beckham doc portrayal was... What did you make of it?
Rough. I'll put it that way. I thought it was rough for
tough
him.
Tough gig.
Yeah, really rough gig.
There's something about... like, so when the England number one question, I think Paul Robinson, he was the, like...
I think Nigel Martin as well, weirdly, though never really England number one.
Arsenal?
No, Leeds.
Leeds, right.
Yeah,
right.
And also Tim Flowers.
Blackburn.
Blackburn. The reason he sticks out in my mind is there used to be coins that you could collect for every team, and they were from an Esso garage, like the fuel, and he was the one that... Either everyone had, so you had him because it was Tim Flowers, like third choice goalkeeper, low value coin, or you were like, oh, need Tim Flowers. And no one could ever, there was like this Tim Flowers market bubble of lots of people who had Tim Flowers and then people who really needed Tim Flowers. And these people never met, weirdly.
Well, I had a similar thing. My friend got back from traveling and I was like, oh, I'll get him some Premier League stickers to say welcome back. Mm-hmm. The Premier League stickers, I don't know if this is the official one or what's going on. They're not 22-23 or 23-24. Mm-hmm. They're 2023. So we open this thing. It's like three Southampton players.
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. So they've found a way.
How does that screw you?
They've found a way to
You bought Hookie.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's your fault.
I was getting James Ward-Prowse Southampton. I wanted the...
You're not happy with that?
No, I wanted the Ange. Right. The Ange? The David... I wanted the David Moyes, scared shitless, you will practice corner kicks right. until your knuckles bleed, young James version.
Do you know what the funny thing is? I actually watched the Louis Theroux Anthony Joshua interview the other day. I'm so confused by Anthony Joshua. It's such a weird... I don't know why I brought this up, but I find him a very confusing character. Like, and it's kind of similar to what I'm sort of sick of in football right now is the performativity of the whole thing. The character he now is doesn't feel like who he is. So I look at him and I'm like, you're not being you. Like, you're not being yourself. And
What's the presented version of him and what's the him version of him?
Just sort of a calm, affable guy, you know? Yeah. I'm just sort of, yeah. You know, I used to be a bit tasty, but I'm not anymore, you know? And maybe that's true. But you can see there's like something screaming inside him when he's given this interview. It's being like, and he wants to tell Luke, like there's one point where he points at his knuckles. You've probably seen that bit. And he's like, knuckles are all, they're messed up, bro. But he's like, yeah, this is from a fight with six guys. And it's sort of like, oh, that's still in there. Like, you just can't show that.
It's also like interesting when boxers feel the need to like exude, aren't I tough? Mm-hmm. Like we know you're tough. You're like 6'6" and you beat up Klitschko. Mm-hmm. It's like footballers showing off that they make money. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, like, I don't know, you used to play behind Zinchenko at City.
Yeah.
Like I know you were on 70 grand a week. Right. Don't show me your knuckles.
Yeah.
Or your bank accounts.
But also just like, if you're going to tell a real story, tell a real story. And that kind of leads me into like what I saw this weekend with the Adidas boot launch with Trent Alexander-Arnold. What a way to transition to the game.
Yeah, good work, that.
So he played in the pair of Predators this weekend, which were unreleased Adidas Predators. Predators is a classic football boot at this point, played in by some of the most iconic players of all time, Zinedine Zidane, at least in that era. Zinedine Zidane, Steven Gerrard, David Beckham. I'm sure there are more. But that's three iconic players, like arguably three of the biggest players of all time in each of their leagues. Trent plays in them. And I think on my last video, I made a joke. It was a tribute to David Beckham when obviously it's a tribute to Gerrard and probably just Trent being his own guy. I think it's the perfect get for Adidas. I think it's like such a good get for them.
He's a bit cool as well, Trent.
He's really cool. Like he's like affable. He's really great conversation. Damn the kids. He's been on Beta Squad. He knows chunks, like all these kind of things. But at the same time, like you get the feeling that he's like the cool, he's still really like down to earth in the same way probably as Chunks and those guys, I think, are. When I say probably, I have met them. And I looked at the launch video and I went, oh no. And don't get me wrong, like I'm sure someone really creative did it. And, you know, I know I've got in trouble before for critiquing other people's creative work. I felt a bit like disappointed. I always feel disappointed when I watch football videos at the moment because it's all of them are like, so, Trent, we need you to read this script about your life that we've written and you're going to tell us about your life, but through our words. I watched the video. I was like, why didn't you just give him a point to riff on and get him to like say it instead of going, for years, I played football when asked on the weekends. You're like, no way.
Also, it's not doing Trent justice because he's great chat.
I know this. I've sat down with him in a Nike documentary and gone, tell us about this. And he's not Mr. Beat.
Have you heard him chat to Alistair Campbell?
Yeah.
He's brilliant. And he's like kind of funny and kind of like unceremonious and kind of like super sharp. Like
loads of great personality. And then I was watching this and I was like, there's none of that in this.
Yeah, and he can also do the other side, by the way, which is, have you seen this thing with like Andy Robertson? Mm-hmm. And he's great there as well.
Great banter.
The other thing about Trent that's cool is like, he's a little bit like the first through the wall on like that kind of right back. Mm-hmm. Like the, oh, I'm David Beckham, but I'm not. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually a bit cooler because I grew up in Liverpool mm-hmm. and play for Liverpool. Mm-hmm. So he's got like the thing that makes him cool, which is kind of how he looks, his shape, his shoulder. He's got an
amazing body.
But I think he's the worst, I was just thinking this, is he not like the least good body for one-on-one defending? Because I think you either want to be like Kieran Trippier, like really low, or you want to be like Kyle Walker, which is just like come out of a lab. Whereas Trent's a bit like Bellingham, Zidane.
He feels quite top heavy.
Yeah. A bit tall.
Like, he looks a bit like, there used to be like an avatar on David Beckham's football boot.
Yeah.
I'm going to put David Beckham. Probably shouldn't rank in David Beckham Predator. I feel like that's...
What, in dangerous territory?
Blue? I know, because I used to have this boot. Blue, maybe it's blue and white. Here you go. Right. Let me see. Does that work? No. It kind of does. I don't know if you can see it. You might be able to see it. Like, can you see that?
Yeah, just a lot.
Yeah. Can you see it?
Yeah, yeah.
That looks very like Trent. No?
As in Trent's upper body.
Yeah. Doesn't
you know
it?
What it is? It's all of the it's the curves and the ridges. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so weird. That really looks like Trent crossing a ball. And he has like a... I know, it's just him. It's weird.
Yeah, you know what's interesting is like, do you think he would get into England's five-a-side team?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. But
he doesn't get into the starting
team. No, no, I know, I know. And the thing is, he's legitimately England's fourth choice right back.
Oh.
But he may well be, because I'm having
him listed as a midfielder for this reason.
Exactly. And I think like Southgate gets a lot of understandable shit.
Mm-hmm.
But like, he's done the thing. He's gone like, let's try this. Kind of fair play.
It works. I mean, it definitely works.
Rice, Bellingham, Trent, Foden, Saka, Kane. Can we just do that? Mm. I'm assuming we can just do that.
Well, we can't. Just to be clear, we could.
We could, right?
I don't know why they don't. I mean, maybe I know why
they don't. We're missing a centre-back is why.
Really?
Well, yeah, I think
John Stones is what you're basically saying. So John Stones is what we're missing right now.
Yeah, I think if we had Stones... Look, if we had Shaw, Walker, Stones, Maguire, or Stones, Gaye, take your pick.
Oh, there's one... Sorry, what? There's one obvious choice there. Gaye? One less... Yeah.
Oh, I think Maguire.
What?
Well, because like at international level, the game's so boxy. Like he's never...
Sure, so it's actually a bit more suited to him.
Yeah, although I say that, if you're playing Trent... Bellingham Rice, you actually might need Gaye.
I also just think if you have, like, international football wise, people look at him and go, I'm going to go at you, bro. They just pick out.
He's like player of the tournament in the Euros. And he's just such a
was
square.
He?
Yeah, he was in team of the tournament for sure. Just such a square.
I feel like that was maybe pre the next era of football. Like that Euros might have marked.
The last.
It's like the epoch has ended.
Okay, so here's my question.
Long live Harry Maguire.
So here's my question.
Yeah.
You know, we're now in the era of like inverted fullbacks and like the end of Danny Drinkwater.
Yeah, centre backs in the next one.
You're now either Akanji or you're Alvarez.
Which is basically a libero or a Trequartista.
Yeah, that's so FM, I love it.
Yeah.
Caveat, obviously there's room for other midfielders.
No, there isn't.
But like the Danny Murphy type. You're either going to now...
What do you think Danny Murphy is, sorry, just out of interest? Because when I think of Danny Murphy, I think Danny Murphy's capable of playing in a double pivot in the modern era.
Yeah,
I don't
maybe.
Know is that
yeah,
true.
Yeah, maybe.
But he's not the first pivot. Like
I have him down as just a box, like a box-to-boxy kind of dude who moves the ball.
I feel like maybe your attribute... I feel like Danny Murphy was slightly more mobile than that.
I saw him only at Fulham though, really.
Right, so I saw him... Obviously, I saw him at Liverpool. Yeah. I feel like he was a bit more mobile than that, but he was also... He's kind of hard to remember at this point, but I do remember him scoring some really good goals. And I do remember it being like, oh, when Danny Murphy's... It was unquestioned that Danny Murphy started in the midfield, if that makes sense. So it was good.
Yeah, that is decent from him.
Danny.
But okay, here's my statement on this. I think you're going to have the midfielder who's awesome on the ball. Mm-hmm. This is, I don't know, like Enzo Fernandez. He will always exist. Mm-hmm. Your Declan Rices, your breakers uppers will always exist. But I think what's now coming in is your inverted centre-half, full-back, and maybe you're like more attacking Bernardo Silva type. Do you think that translates to international level? Do you think we find... Because there just isn't enough time on the training pitch is my question.
Oh, interesting. But maybe if you played at your club, then that's the same as saying like there's not enough... They didn't feel like there was maybe enough time to be as progressed as a fullback at international level because...
That seems simpler mechanically though, doesn't it? Just bomb on.
Going inside.
Yeah, well, because I'm thinking, right, if Southgate decided to go like modern midfielder... We play Phil Foden in advanced eight. He'd be the Odegaard, right? He'd be
so sole eight.
Advanced eight. So you'd have like a 4-3-3 and you'd have like a midfield three of like Bellingham, Foden, Rice. That would be the modern...
Where does Trent...
Oh, see. This is maybe why Trent's a nice compromise, right?
I feel like compromise is not needed in this England team.
Do you think Trent just goes straight in alongside Rice and Bellingham, or do you think instead it's like a Calvin Phillips and you play a double pivot there? Or do you think it's someone else entirely?
Do you know what I feel like Trent does offer is an element of unpredictability that at an international level makes us really hard to play. What you kind of want is players that you sort of go, what do you do again? And there's just so much he can do. He's so versatile. In the same way as Bellingham is so versatile, Rice is so versatile. If you started a Bellingham-Rice midfield with Trent as like either part of a double pivot or one of the two eights, which you probably could do actually, he could be the right-sided eight and Bellingham could be the left-sided sort of eight come whatever it is the role he plays now.
Well, it's an interesting question because quite often when I watch England, and it sounds silly given how good we are going forward, it's like, oh God, this is so predictable. It's either going to be Sterling scores, which is a little bit dated now, or Kane's going to score a penalty. Mm-hmm. So to have Trent in there, like tiring defences, space opening up.
And Bellingham. Bellingham and Trent. Although maybe because both of them are two wondering, you then need someone who's different to Rice. Partly, you might have just compromised on one of the three. And the easiest compromise is Trent because Bellingham and Rice just make too compelling of a case. And also are, you look at them and go, I know where you play. Whereas with Trent, you're sort of like, well, you could just play right back.
You know, what's interesting too is whether Bellingham is forcing Southgate to rethink things.
I mean, also, yeah, I get that. Yeah, right.
Because when you watched England without him, you just thought, Jesus, they are missing something big. And it's like, hang on, the version of Bellingham that's playing today is a different Bellingham to last year. He was great last year during the World Cup, but he's now like an upgraded, more well-rounded, more goal-scoring version. And I wonder if he's kind of the answer to the goal-scoring problem in the way that he is at Real Madrid.
Does that require a completely different Harry Kane?
No, because Kane likes dropping in anyway. So when Real Madrid are doing it, he's playing like a 10 and the two strikers are going
wide.
Kane...
Sort of like Venables. Yeah. Venables kind of did that. Yeah. Like, I think he's like David Platt.
Who? Bellingham.
Yeah, and that would make Paul Ince, Rice, and then that would make Trent, Steve McManaman. I don't remember who the other one was.
That's a really nice comparison, by the way, because you got the Scouse thing.
Yeah, and they're both like...
Unpredictable.
Yeah, a bit unpredictable, carry the ball quite well. Sometimes you can get a bit like, you know they're amazing and you know what they were trying to do was awesome, but sometimes you're like, didn't quite come off.
Do you buy the argument that Liverpool should bring in the right back? And
I think you, yeah, I kind of do, but I feel like that's just more of a depth thing. But at the same time, I don't buy it because Joe Gomez actually is a very capable, adaptable, right-sided player. So he's very good at filling in at right back. He's very good at filling in right centre back. Liverpool's centre back situation has changed a lot in the off-season from not changing the centre-backs, from showing faith in those guys. And I feel like that has kind of worked. It was unusual they started Matip against City. I mean, not unusual. We know probably why. It was probably an illness/injury thing. But like you kind of wonder what it would have been like if they'd have started Konate, how aggressive it could have been. But then Matip is very underestimated. And
I've always preferred him.
To Konate.
Yeah, and I know, like, that's not the same as me saying he's better than Konate. He's probably not as good as Konate.
You preferred what you see with him.
Yeah, I just always feel like he's got this, like, kick out of defense. Like, I'm going to drive.
That does worry players. I think a lot of players worry about that.
And he always feels to be, like, the spare man. It's always like, oh, you're not going to press me because I'm not Van Dijk. So you're going to give it to me. And he kind of just goes, okay, and strides forward. And against City, he...
Did that
to force a save out of Edison.
Yeah.
He played the ball out wide.
But that also can sometimes... So sometimes he tries that and you never see it because it doesn't work out. Mm-hmm. So watching the full game, you're like, he's doing that run. That's going to happen maybe once more in this game. Unless the team obviously just doesn't shut him down at all. And then he basically goes, I can just go wherever I want. But City obviously will know all these trends. And I felt like that was something I wanted to discuss on this, was like less... We will talk about whether Liverpool were or are title contenders. But with... the way that Klopp's playing now, it's obviously a different press. It's obviously a different shape. It's obviously a different, the whole team is very, very different. So weirdly, like comparing them to last season almost doesn't work. But if you think about, our level of analysis has gone up season on season on season. It's gotten so meta now that now we're like, okay, so we've gone from knowing that Jurgen Klopp presses and going, pressing good, to now going, you don't press enough, to then going, but you're not pressing enough for another reason. So like, we've added layers to our understanding through the outcomes, but we still feel weirdly behind on analysing Liverpool?
I don't get Liverpool in the like analytical sense of the term. I watch them and I'm impressed and they look great and they change very quickly. Because they've changed so fast, I don't think I understand Liverpool. So like, this is Jamie's lack of understanding. initially, counter press, Gangan press.
It really worked.
And it was awesome and it was like very intense.
And also like baiting the press, like a lot, like baiting the pass to then press. So it was like, at the time, it looked very intense because of the way it was. And it was very intense. And then it became baiting. So that was sort of like, go on, then pass it there. And then we'll see whether you can get through that bit.
Well, Evolution 1 was just, let's press. Then, as you say, it became a little bit more like, we're going to wait for the trigger. And then it was a little bit more targeted.
And that felt like City knew, and this is what I'm talking about, the meta element of it. City knew that on the weekend. And they've obviously always known it. And maybe our analysis has just been too simplistic. But what I mean by that is like, City knew that and it felt very evident on the weekend to me that City were looking for the patterns that Liverpool were trying to go in and trying to exploit those patterns almost. And I feel like that's where this Liverpool team is currently at, is like they are feeling very confident about this new identity, but you have to allow the space for that new identity to expand and you have to have the players to enact that. And Curtis Jones coming back and being dropped straight in is really interesting, but there's still the McAllister at the six issue, or McAllister being the deepest role in the team that I think is at the moment the limiting factor for our build-up play.
Liverpool, this is why they're confusing. Because in some ways they don't feel as like vertical as they used to be. They feel like they keep the ball and control the ball better.
Yeah.
But then you have like the odd verticalness, like Trent Alexander-Arnold, for example, being this like quarterback figure within a more controlled version of Liverpool than we've seen in the past. Mm-hmm. And when you watch them, it's like, okay, so are you about like getting Nunez in or Salah in, or are you about like McAllister playing a 1-2 or both?
Sure. I get that. And I think, do you know, on top of that as well, it seems like kind of, and this is where I'll struggle to explain this, but like narratives can sometimes really undermine like the assumptions that narratives can do on your analysis and like sort of undermine your entire analysis are very prevalent with Liverpool. And have really undermined the analysis of Liverpool in recent seasons, where it's like, well, Klopp presses, so X, they're not doing X. And people are always like, but they press, they don't do this, they don't do that. And what we found now is that Liverpool are slightly more passive, but passive in a like a good sense of the word, where it's like, oh, they're being passive. Like, they're meant to be being passive in this phase.
And it's because, obviously, the legs just dropped out of that Liverpool midfield over 12 months.
To an extent. I also just think Klopp, when they bought Carvalho and Harvey Elliott, and then they started focusing on like that area more, it was clearly a signal to move towards a different emphasis on the pitch, more towards those like 17 and 18 areas right in front of the penalty area. And that like that was somewhere that Liverpool hadn't focused in that way, in the like that control. Like there's a lot more carrying of the ball now than there is of like Jordan Henderson wouldn't carry as much. He would either be static and move it on, or like it would be a pass or a little bounce pass or a little like pass and move kind of thing. It doesn't quite feel that one-dimensional anymore. There feels to be a bit more...
It's more sophisticated now because they can still do the vertical pressing thing. But they've added a string to their bow. It's kind of as if Thiago hadn't been injured for two seasons.
Sure.
And he'd come in and made Liverpool a bit more controlled. Mm-hmm. Like that's happened through the revamp of the midfield and that's happened through the adjusted style of play.
Yeah.
The cool thing about that though, is when they went to City, they still pressed City at the Etihad and they still moved the ball forward quickly.
Really well.
So like Liverpool have this nice balance around them now, which like...
It felt a little bit more like... I think against City, it felt a little bit more disjointed, but you could see there's been a few games where it's like you can see what they're trying to do, but it doesn't quite work.
I also
and
think
that's really hard to analyze if you're not a Liverpool fan or if you're not watching them week in, week out. You're sort of like, that didn't work.
It's also like at the Etihad, though, the disjointedness is almost like slightly intentional because if you want to hit on the break and take risks, it's very difficult to do that and keep the ball under a lot of pressure.
Right.
Like the whole game was a little bit disjointed.
And that was as much because also both managers are really good at reading the other manager and anticipating. And to an extent, they psych each other out. Like they sort of go, but you're going to do this. No, but you're going to do this. You're going to do this.
Yeah, I saw Foden get the ball. And like immediately three players on his back.
Yeah, right.
And it's like, good luck having a cohesive game of football.
Yeah, I get that, yeah. But also, Foden had a really good game for City. I felt like because Liverpool came back, we've kind of like, and because we're not quite sure where City sit at the moment, we're like a little bit unsure of... No one's really said anything about City after that game at all, really.
We haven't learned anything, is what I'd say, from City.
Do you think?
No, we know what they are. They're going to be good until March, and then they're going to be really good. And they're doing it without their like best player, more or less, which is De Bruyne. And they're also missing John Stones, mm-hmm. who's like their third. It probably goes, leaving Haaland aside, because I don't know what to say about him. It kind of goes De Bruyne, Rodri, John Stones, okay. probably.
And in terms of importance or emphasis, Rodri might...
Rodri might be more important.
Rodri might be like the most important, because when they lost him, they lost both or two of the games and then drew another or won another.
I think they lost three in a row. Didn't they lose one in the cup and Wolves,
right.
the cup,
the, whatever else it was.
Wolves, Arsenal, something. Yeah.
And that was not good. Like by definition of losing.
But the point is like the City that we're seeing now, which is, it always feels also like they take 3 months to warm up to what Pep's new thing is. Mm-hmm. And they're still more or less top of the league always. Last year they were chasing Arsenal, but they're within touching distance. So
Arsenal this year.
And they are again. Yeah. By the way, that's the other, in the same way I'm saying it's encouraging that City are at touching distance without being brilliant, the same applies for Arsenal. They've not been nearly as free-flowing as they were last year. But shit, they're top of the league. Like, well done them. Like, if they do find any fluency, I don't think their squad is strong enough to win the league. I think we saw that on the weekend against Brentford. I know they won the game and it was awesome and title winning, blah, blah, blah. But I was watching it and thinking, this is the difference between you and City. City would bring on, I don't know, City would bring on Alvarez, or City would bring on Foden or Grealish.
Or just someone, yeah.
Like, or Doku.
Doku was kind of insane on the weekend. Like, I know, obviously... What I thought was interesting about Doku was like people, he won his one-on-ones with Trent, but it was like, yeah, but that's kind of what, like, there's almost like an element of like playing possum with Trent, where it's sort of like, go on then, beat me. And then when you do, Matip's there, or whoever's coming in to drop into midfield to come win the ball. Like, they almost just drop Trent there as like bait. And I feel like that's where we're like not, when there's not enough analysis of what Liverpool are actually trying to do. It's sort of like Trent's meant to be good. Trent meant to win ball.
Yeah, also being beaten by Doku isn't a criticism one-on-one. Everyone gets beaten by Doku one-on-one.
He's kind of like watching him. It's horrible as an opposition fan. I love it. Like, I mean, I love it in the sense of like, I love him as a player. I think I can't believe that like City just got him so unopposed.
Yeah.
It felt that way. I mean, who else can you name who can really, if City go high enough, who was Barcelona? He feels like a bit of a Barcelona player, but maybe that's because he plays in Pep team. He feels like such a Barcelona player.
He feels like a 2023 ex-Premier League, not very good, kind of very good.
Yeah. He also feels like he's got the ability to play left wing for Juve.
Oh, but later. Give him 3 years to get to the Europa League final with Juve. Mm. But you're right. Like, he's quite unique. And as far as like, I also like that Grealish is the control. He retains the ball more. He's less this evolved version of Grealish, mm-hmm. if you like, rather than the Villa one. It's a bit more controlled, a bit more checking in, a bit more all of that stuff. And Doku's kind of the live wire. He's the like more raw.
He's more active almost.
Exciting.
And there's more like, let's just get, what's the end product here? Bang, bang, bang.
His end product is also like...
actually really good.
Way, like, because, you know, usually the lad you've never heard of who signs for City, who takes everyone on, the reason why you hadn't heard of him is because he's got a shit end ball.
Yeah.
But he doesn't. He picks out a man most of the time.
Right. And yeah. That was, you sort of look at it and go, oh, right, you are actually, this is like... this is working like so early as well. And maybe that's due to injuries. Maybe that is due to like need for Doku to be in the team. So there's just this like, well, you're in.
Isn't it cool though that Pep like started out at Barca with Henri and Eto and was like wingers and then kind of lost the thread on the wingers and thought, really wingers. We've got
all these.
We've got Gabriel Jesus. Yeah, he'll play there. And now it's like, oh, back. I'm not going to play with the striker. Oh, Haaland, centre forward. I'm going to play with the winger. Oh, Doku, winger. He's kind of adaptable in the same way that Klopp were given credit for his adaptability. And it's cool because in the era of football philosophies, I'm looking at you, Ange, it's cool to have a little bit of adaptability within a framework, you know?
Yeah, I felt like, you know, the whole thing with the whole Ange thing where he still played a really high line against, was it Arsenal?
Chelsea.
Chelsea, sorry.
With nine men.
Yeah. I was like, I know everyone was giving him credit and I mean, yeah, to an extent you deserve that credit, but I was also looking at it like, you lost. Like, you didn't do what... I get it. Like, they were like, oh, well, late on, it almost worked. It was like, yeah, but you could also say that the other way. You could have also lost 5-2 or whatever it could have been.
It depends who you're managing. At Spurs, you're allowed to.
You can do that. Right. So it's like, if that was Liverpool, you'd get absolutely ripped because everyone would just be like, this is insane. Whereas with Spurs, it's like, no reputation to lose. what are you really losing anyway?
Ten Hag would have been beheaded on the center circle.
Right.
The full-time whistle would have gone and they would have brought on the guillotine and it would have been all very procedural. Like,
yeah, and Gary Neville would have gone, just part of being a Manchester United manager. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
I think also Spurs are wounded from playing such shit football for 2 years.
Yeah, and now, but weirdly, like they've lost how many games in the run now? Three.
Three. Yeah, they're playing their B team though. They're literally missing their two centre halves, two midfielders, and a centre forward. Because they're missing Saar, Basuma, Maddison. That's a triangle. And they're missing the Dutch lads.
Van de Ven.
And Romero.
Yeah.
So they're playing four fullbacks.
Which is harsh.
And Villa to beat them on the weekend.
Yeah.
I was trying to ship the very unlikely take that they're just really good Burnley. And I'll explain it.
Go on.
In as far as it's such a bad opinion.
Oh, it's a really unlikely take, I put it that way.
Is that Burnley were played a certain way. And the way they played facilitated getting 100 points in the championship when they had the better players. But will facilitate getting 23 points in the Premier League because they've got worse players. Villa haven't really, like, bar the weekend, had a game all year. They've either been battered or battered teams. And
yeah, there's not been like a,
I think the way they play is so exposing of the footballers. Like, there's nowhere to hide. That if they're better than you, they're probably going to win. If they're worse than you, they're probably going to lose. And
I like that.
It's kind of ambitious. It's cool. Like,
so wait, you're saying they're better? So at the moment, they're better than Spurs, but on paper, if you started your two strongest 11, the Spurs have got a much better team. Well, yeah.
Well, I think the existence of Spurs at the moment is the counter argument to my point. Because they're so similar.
John McGinn was like a weird one on the weekend. I looked at him and I was like, are people sleeping on you now in this?
He's got the best bum. I mean, that functionally and aesthetically.
Yeah.
In football.
Like, well, no, aesthetically, that's not true. Yeah, but okay.
Take it back.
Yeah. But you mean in football?
He's like got the perfect, you know what I was saying, Trent might be too like tall or top heavy to defend one-on-one. Mm-hmm. He's got the perfect, I'm going to be really good for Scotland in a surprisingly advanced role body, which is like, go on, get it off me.
And physically.
Yeah.
He turned someone on the weekend and I was like, oh.
John McGinn is stout. That's what John McGinn is.
He's also like Scottish stacked. So he's like, you imagine he's just like a piece of wood.
Yeah, he's also like, I just love that him and McTominay are like a genuinely fearsome international.
Horrible.
I mean, really though, you know, McTominay is, I think, the top scorer in the Euro qualifiers. That could be wrong, but I think he's got more goals than anyone. Carrie Kane might have now changed that.
Love that though.
But it's like McSauce, perfect. And I love that Steve Clarke has found his like eudaimonia, you know, his like eudaimonic role where he's just like, oh, I'll take a side who are kind of the West Brom of international football. I hope West Brom fans will, who's that more of an insult to?
Who's thanking you?
I mean,
both.
Neither. Yeah. Okay. But he's taken the West Brom and gone, okay, both our best players are left backs. Only one of them is fit at the time. We don't have a striker, so let's sign one from Australia. We don't have a goalkeeper. Okay, well, Angus Gunn's going from England.
Bam.
We need another striker. I wonder what Che Adams is up to.
McAdams.
And he's kind of worked it all out.
Sure. I don't really have a response to that because I can't undermine Scotland and I can't really analyse them enough to say that I know or do not know them. But I get what you're saying. It seems like this kind of like he's maximising the pieces that he has in there and that the sum of their parts is much stronger than it was, which then feeds into why isn't McTominay then playing more for Manchester United? Because he seems like the kind of player who's capable, when given a very solid role, of, you should do more than the sum of your parts.
I think it's because international football is slower.
Yeah, for sure.
And I wonder this, you know, about Serie A as well. Like every time a player, like a midfield player, leaves England to go to Serie A, it's hard to help. You just think, oh, he'll do really well there. And if you ask yourself, like, why do you think that? It's because you can just imagine him sitting there in the middle of the midfield, not running.
Right.
Being a good footballer.
Oh.
I think international football, it's not a surprise Maguire and McTominay, who are United, have struggled at times, are viewed as like top international players. It just suits them. Or Scamacca.
Yeah.
Couldn't get into West Ham's team. But he's Italy's number nine.
That's an Italian thing.
That is a
little Scottish starting seeing themselves more like the Italians. Self-image, I feel like, is like a real thing. And that's partly why the Ange thing works with Spurs. Klopp works with Liverpool. Arteta works with Arsenal. They've all found people who kind of fit the mold correctly rather than like remold.
It's also why, I mean, like in the Rugby World Cup, Ireland have never won a knockout game, which is just a crazy stat in the history of Ireland. They've never won a knockout game.
That's good.
And then when they played South Africa, it was like they're better than South Africa, or they played New Zealand even. But just the shirt
works.
Just the shirt works.
Yeah.
And, you know, the England shirt used to weigh heavy.
Yeah. And now it doesn't in the same way.
And it's the same, you know, with Liverpool, like, or even Arsenal on the weekend. Arsenal wouldn't have won that game in recent years, but now playing for Arsenal means something 10% different.
Who's more likely to win the Premier League, Liverpool or Arsenal?
It's a brilliant question.
It's one that a lot of people have asked, and we're going to finish the podcast on it.
Let me just talk it through. Arsenal, we know what they are a little bit more than we know what Liverpool are. Liverpool are a little bit newer.
Do you really think that? So I feel the opposite.
Tell me.
I feel like Arsenal at the moment, I feel like I'm not sure I could name Mikel Arteta's strongest starting 11. I'm not sure Mikel Arteta can currently name what he would consider to be his strongest starting 11. Maybe that's a good thing. I feel like Liverpool can name their strongest starting 11 and the players who come off the bench at which point in the game. And we know that in January, the likelihood is they attack a more defensively minded player and begin to rotate that midfield just a little bit more with Havenberg and even Cody Akpo, who deserves a lot of credit for the weekend, didn't really get it in the first place, came on, enabled Liverpool to play a bit more expansive football, enabled them to drive again with the ball in the same way as Klopp wanted to, with Gravenberg on one side, Cody Hakpo on the other. And if you put a six in the middle of that, or someone who's more defensively minded, I feel like there's maybe just, maybe, barring injuries, there's a slightly more formed and slightly more resilient.
Yeah, and it's possible, now I say it as well, Liverpool have more on the bench. Like, if Saka gets injured, which Arteta's sort of trying his best to do.
Yeah.
Or Saliba, God help us, like last year gets injured. I'm not sure Arsenal have a replacement in the same way that Liverpool can bring in Diaz or Jota or Gakpo. Or at the back, they've got either Matip or Konate.
Yeah, I get that. And maybe Tsimikas is a possible weakness. A lot of people like his performance on the weekend, but really, you know.
I think I've had my mind changed. I think...
Oh, it was pretty quick.
I think that... Well, I'm so on the fence about it. Like, Liverpool's depth... The thing that I like about Arsenal is they did it last year. They ran City really close. And maybe they're, like, not quite as good, but they're top of the league, despite being not as good. I like that. Liverpool are new, as of this year. It's a fresh kind of thing. But they've kind of figured it out quite quick, and they've got lots off the bench. So I'll say Liverpool, but it's, like, 51-49.
Yeah, I feel like the reason you could do Arsenal, and I mean the reason you could do Liverpool as well, is there is the experience of pushing City relatively close. I feel like Liverpool have pushed them slightly closer. You could also
less
say
recently.
That there's a Last Dance type feel to Liverpool as well, allegedly, where it's sort of like a lot of players are sort of like, oh, this might be the last chance we get to win it with a fully fit, regularly playing Virgil van Dijk. Maybe we'll get one more season. Mo Salah being in the team. I think there's a couple of guys who are like, oh, this might be, this is getting into the twilight runs now. Andy Robertson as well, I'd imagine. And
isn't it interesting?
Might be it. Maybe Alisson the push, but I don't think Alisson.
Isn't it interesting though? Because I totally buy that Last Dance thing, but it's also like a new Liverpool side. It's kind of both. It's kind of exciting.
Yeah, but the new, young, invigorated players are in, and those old there is a bit more of a balance. I feel like Arsenal maybe this season. Maybe I'm analysing them on the goals they set out at the start of the season, as opposed to the goals that they probably have now. They are still doing very well in their Champions League group. They're still, you know, on to easily go through. They're still top of the league, obviously. So they're a fantastic side in that sense. But I do feel like I'll be interested to see whether they can replicate that in other more difficult scenarios, which seems like quite a stacked end to them, or at least like a stacked second half.
It's also interesting because there's an era in Arsenal football, which is really weird. It's like, oh, Walcott was in the same team as Lundberg?
Yeah.
There's that era. It's like a weird crossover
season.
Liverpool, we might look back at this side and go, what? Like, Solskjaer played with like Salah? That's so weird.
Yeah, that is strange. I get what you mean. It would have been even weirder if it was like Solskjaer and Henderson in the same team, but I don't feel like those two ever would have started the same
Henderson
games.
Leaving may well be like, ah, that's that era.
It feels like it was a turning point in Liverpool's history, I think. Like, losing both those players and possibly the impending loss of Mo Salah. Pretty I don't know, like it's pretty, like weirdly, if Saudi Arabia didn't exist, I feel like Liverpool's transfer policy actually might have been a more difficult one.
I think what's happened here is Liverpool are like a guy who's like had a breakup and it had to happen. Like it was clearly going that way. And everyone thought, okay, like the next 6 months, it's November, it's dark, might be tough. But then you see him out and about and he's got like facial hair and it's working for him.
Yeah.
And it's kind of dynamic.
He's going to the gym because he's got all that free time.
Yeah. And it's kind of like ahead of where it should be. Like right. You knew it was always going to get fixed and he was going to be fine. But it's kind of a new style and I'm liking right. it. Like, and I'm saying I haven't seen enough of Liverpool to really understand exactly what they do. It's just new and weird and I like it.
I like that. Yeah.
Whereas like Arsenal, for example, are like the dude who is still with the girl and they've changed things a little bit and it's maybe a little bit less exciting mm-hmm. than it was. Like their lifestyle is a little bit more conservative. Mm-hmm. But shit, like they're top of the league. So you're comparing those two and you're going, who would you rather be? And I don't know the answer.
That is what I'd like to see in the comments. Thank you very much for watching a slightly different angle of the we're going to call it the graphic. Yeah, the graphic podcast.
The graphic podcast.
Sounds a little bit different, looks a little bit different. We're going to work out a visual style. But what I wanted to do was sort of like do this. We've been snacking on these all the way through the pod. We've been filming on these. And I kind of like being able to see the cameras on camera. What do you think of the visual style? I like it. I don't. Maybe you don't.
It's kind of down to earth, right?
It feels a little bit more like real. I felt like a lot of other people are sort of like, hide everything. Or like, hey, we're in a studio. It's like, cool, nice studio.
Yeah, I like it this way.
Yeah, me too. Let us know what you guys think in the comments below. Obviously, you're all happy to have Jamie back because that seems to be the general consensus on the channel. But thank you very much for watching. Jamie has your own thing. Have you posted on that? When was the last time you posted on that? Have you posted my podcast again?
Not yet.
You'd fix the audio.
We did a podcast and it was so good. And what I uploaded success. It. You know, I got home in the evening. And then next day, edited from about midday to 2 a.m. And then was so exhausted when I uploaded it, the volume was fucked.
And that, my friends, is how to re-upload a podcast. Thanks a lot for watching us. Head over to Jamie's channel. I'll put the link in the description. This podcast will retake a new form soon. Maybe a little bit more structured in the future. But if you want to let us know who you think wins the league in the comments below, probably you could just be as apocalyptic and say City as you want, or you could tell me what your logic is behind others. In weeks to come, let us know the subjects you'd love to hear. Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere good that you get your podcasts. And we'll see you again real soon right here on this channel, but others too. Bye.
Goodbye.